All right, we're back on Periscope. We're going to give this a try. Our key piece of equipment, the only UPS that we could find, the only uninterruptible power supply we could find, and the pandemic shortages just died on us. It must be something that got over on one of the boats from China. But it lasted a day. So we were able to do the broadcast yesterday. We finished with about 2% on the UPS after 3 hours because they're doing rolling blackouts for those of you who are not in Texas experiencing this. What they're doing is having about 20 minutes to 30 minutes on and about 30 to 40 minutes off. So that's what we're having here. So we could not get, we had it charging all night last night. It only had about 70%, and it kicked off with us, as you saw, after about 5 minutes of the broadcast. So let me just pull through and cover a few things. And I really want to talk about energy issues because this is something that is affecting 150 million people across the U.S., but this is not just a U.S. problem. And in the midst of this ice age that we're experiencing here, these record temperature lows, we have Bill Gates going on CBS pushing climate change again because this is the key to get everything that they want. This is why we understood from the very beginning what this Great Reset was about. They'd sold all of these measures that have been pushed on us with the pandemic. They sold them for decades as a solution to the existential threat of climate change. So it was going to be a new ice age when they first started back in the first Earth Day, 1970. Then they turned it into global warming, and we were told that we're going to run out of oil anyway. Remember that in the late 1970s? They said we're going to be out of oil and gas by the mid to late 80s, and coal they couldn't pretend we were going to be out of. America basically has, we're kind of the Saudi Arabia of coal, so they're just going to flat out ban that. And so now we've moved on to renewable resources, and this is something that is not just happening here in Texas, it's happening in Germany and other places. They're finding the same problems there that we're experiencing now. This type of thing has never happened before, and it's not just because we have record coal. It's because we've moved to renewable sources that are unreliable that we're having these kinds of rolling blackouts. More than 70% of the U.S. was covered as of Monday afternoon. But, of course, you know, it's global warming indeed that is the issue. And as we look at Texas, Texas is kind of a special case. Texas has its own power grid that's separate from the rest of the country. Oklahoma, however, is experiencing similar blackouts for the first time. They said, in our history as a grid operator, this is an unprecedented event. Marks the first time that the Oklahoma utilities have ever had to call for controlled interruptions of service that is coming from the Southwest Power Pool, SPP. It's a regional transmission, but again, we have in Texas a different regional transmission. They said the energy generated by wind was the most used resource on its grid in 2020, edging out coal from the top position for the first time ever in Oklahoma. And so what we're seeing in Oklahoma, what we're seeing in Texas, what we're seeing in Germany is the fact that moving to coal and to solar is causing us to freeze to death here and not have energy. But as extreme demand for energy climbed quickly as temperatures plummeted last week, renewables haven't always been available to supply the needed energy. Last week in particular, icing took out part of the region's wind portfolio. It took it offline. Still, the generators have had to increase their reliance on coal and natural gas-fired units to meet climbing demand, leaving some in a bind because the natural gas, which effectively doubles as both a fuel used to generate electricity on an industrial scale and also to provide a source of energy for heating and cooking in homes, has been in short supply. And so we're cutting down the production of reliable, traditional, proven energy, and we are going to renewables, which are not reliables. That's the bottom line. The grid operator in Oklahoma first asked its members to delay planned maintenance outages on natural gas-fired and coal-fired power plants. Then they issued an alert requiring them to activate those facilities. And as we've got more than 4 million people who are out of power, 3.5 million of them in Texas alone, the grid managers can't say exactly when these blackouts are going to end. And so when we look at what is happening with the demand to try to get traditional energy generation back online, that is having an effect on oil production, which has been dropping. It's dropped 1.5 to 1.7 million barrels per day because of the pandemic. And that has caused the price of oil to climb back up. It was well under $40 for quite a while. Now it's back up to $60. Some of the largest oil refineries have shut down altogether, however, threatening to reduce supplies of gasoline and diesel across the country. Here in Texas, the Electric Reliability Council, ERCOT, and that has a ring of cynicism to it now, the Electric Reliability Council here in Texas, declared an emergency alert phase three on Monday. And so, you know, again, this is what we're what we've seen in the past. I've been through a hurricane in North Carolina. I grew up in Florida, where hurricanes were a regular occurrence. And not being right on the coast, I mentioned before my grandparents had, when they retired, they had some beachfront property because in those days, all the beachfront property wasn't bought up by hedge fund managers from New York, building massive condominiums and that are like skyscrapers. Couldn't even find where my grandparents used to live in old Florida. But every time there was a hurricane that would come by, there'd be massive damage to the two cottages that they had on the ocean. And then they lived in a duplex where they rented part of that that was a little bit further back from the ocean. But in Tampa, we typically didn't have a lot of problems. There'd occasionally be a hurricane that would come through. And sometimes the hurricanes would spawn tornadoes, and that would be a big deal. But when I was in North Carolina, I didn't really take it that seriously because we were very far inland in the Raleigh-Durham area. And Hurricane Fran, when it came through, it wasn't even a hurricane by the time it got to where Raleigh was. So Karen and I were not taking it very seriously. We were out and about doing things. She had my mother, who was in a wheelchair, in the car with her, and the two young kids. And I was had a business meeting. And so, but we almost all of us got stranded because even though it was only 75-mile-an-hour winds, there was so much rain that had happened. We had trees that were coming down all over Raleigh that had been up for over 100 years, well over 100 years. And so it was a very unique storm. And that caused power outages that lasted almost a week because the falling trees took out a lot of power lines. That's typically what you see when you have power outages due to a storm. That's not happening right now. We've had ice. We've had a lot of snow here. Pretty surprising to see this in Austin. But that's not what is happening. What is happening is based on fraudulent design because of green politics. We have deliberately shut down power plants that were reliable and put up these renewables that are not reliable, this unproven technology. And now we're seeing what the real issue is. And it's broad-based what's happening here. Of course, Governor Abbott is trying to cover it up. Abbott has, even though he's called out the National Guard, he was telling everybody that the power grid is not compromised. I wonder what a compromised power grid would look like to Governor Abbott. This guy is the biggest political hack and liar I've ever seen in my life, this Republican governor. Just remember this when he runs for national office, when he probably will. What is compromised is the power grid itself and the means of which they are producing energy. And to get an idea of what is happening and how starved we are for basic electricity, ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Company of Texas, or whatever they call it, Council of Texas, they typically pay about $25 per megawatt hour to get power. Now they are paying between $2,500 and $9,000 per megawatt hour. So they're paying anywhere from 100 to 400 times the typical going rate to try to get power out there. Why? Because they shot themselves and us in the foot with the renewables. Let's take a look at what's happening in Germany. There's an article out of Germany just a week ago. Is Germany making too much renewable energy? They're having the same problem. So I've just told you what's happening in Oklahoma, what's happening in Texas. This is also happening in Germany. This is happening everywhere because the Green New Deal is a global scam. They're doing the same thing to everybody. For Germany, 2020 was a banner year and the production of renewable energy. Wind farms and solar arrays, as well as hydroelectric and so power consumption, were up to 46% of total power consumption, nearly equaling that of coal, gas, oil, and nuclear power combined. But again, when we look at Oklahoma, you know, they've edged out the fossil fuel power plants in Oklahoma with renewables. And Oklahoma, like Texas, is a big oil and gas producing state, unlike Germany. So Germany has nearly with renewables, wind and solar has equal that of coal, gas, oil, and nuclear combined, the reliable forms of energy. So I said, but what happens when the sun doesn't shine or the wind doesn't blow? Or as we're seeing right now, when the windmills are freezing and they don't move anymore. Well, you know, we can, or, you know, we've also, the other aspect that we've talked about for a long time, because I've done this for a long time. Before I was in front of the camera, I was behind the camera as a media consultant and a producer for organizations that were fighting this global warming scam. And so I've been watching this for quite some time. It's something I know a great deal about. And I've seen this problem developing for a long time. One of the things we always point out was that cheap and affordable energy is not just a lifestyle convenience, you know, so that you can have nice things like electricity to do broadcasts or to cook or to heat your home, because the home is really pretty cold right now with no power. And it's not just a lifestyle advantage. It also has a great deal to do with life expectancy. And we can see this as we look at developing countries where energy is very expensive. They have not only poor lifestyle quality, but they have a shorter lifespan. And it is even starting to happen. When I was covering this over a decade ago, they were talking about how this push in Germany to go with new technology, very expensive technology, to invest all that money, and then they have to recap that money. You know, as we're now in desperation here in Texas, as we point out, they're paying anywhere from 100 to 400 times what they did for energy because they're desperate. Their renewables have failed them, so they're clamoring around to try to find this stuff. Well, it's not typically that expensive, but it is more expensive than what you typically have. So you would have people who are on pensions, retired people in Germany, some of them freezing to death because they cannot afford to pay for the heat. Even though it's available, they can't afford it because of the expensive technology, which is what Bill Gates is trying to force upon us. It's one of the aspects that he's doing here. But as they point out in Germany, they said, well, we've been covered a little bit because we've gone so much into renewables, but there is a problem with reliability when the sun doesn't shine and when the solar panels are covered with snow and ice and they don't work. We can get power from our neighbors who haven't been so foolish and who haven't spent so much money in renewables. So what is certain, however, is that further expansion of renewables will increase volatility in the system. This is an article from February the 10th, before all this happened. In Texas, in Oklahoma, part of the oil production in the U.S. Energy blackouts are the bugbear that industrialists and conventional energy sector have long warned about in ominous tones. That's right. We talked about it for a very long time. And so as they were talking about this in Germany on the 9th and the 10th, headline news in Germany, Coal Comfort, C-O-A-L, total collapse in wind and solar output leaves freezing Germans desperate for coal-fired power, just like we have here in Texas. They said at the time, millions of solar panels blanketed in snow and ice, and with breathless freezing weather in Germany, again, not even a week ago, they're encouraging their 30,000 wind turbines to do absolutely nothing at all. Nothing at all. I don't know if their wind turbines froze like they have here in Texas. And they said, don't forget, there's also a constant supply of electricity from the grid to the windmills to keep them from freezing up. Evidently, they didn't have that kind of design, or something went wrong here in Texas, or it was heavier than they expected. They said, Germany's coal-fired power plants are now being appreciated for what they are, truly meaningful power generation sources available on demand, whatever the weather. You know, there's something to be said about old reliable technology. When I was interviewing to move back to the East Coast, I talked to a company that was doing some military industrial contract work, and I couldn't believe how old the equipment that was their newest equipment that they were working with on these different approaches was. And it's because they had to, for it to be used for military purposes, they had to be tested for a very, very, very long time. Another reason why it's so surprising that the military's Operation Warp Speed doesn't test the vaccines at all. And that to test them like they do their electronics equipment, take decades, put them in every kind of environment, from Arctic winters to Sahara deserts. And by the time they finish all that, the technology is pretty old, but it's tested. And they haven't done that for the vaccines. They haven't done it for the power generation equipment either. Going back a little bit earlier, a week before this, there was more talk in Germany about what was happening. Berlin on the brink, the headline said. Winter blackouts loom as coal plants run at 100% capacity and still struggle to keep the lights on. Why? Because they've shut down the coal power plants. They don't have enough of them anymore. That's why I was saying, if you have the old reliable technology, like the military would do with their radios and other things, that's what the coal power plants are. You know, there's something to be said for having something around for a very long time that you know works and you know where the problems are. Germany now finds itself in the dead of winter. Much of the country has seen considerable snowfall, meaning that solar powers are covered with snow, solar panels are covered with snow and rendered useless. Moreover, there's been long periods with no wind, and Germany's approximately 30,000 wind turbines have been largely out of operation. In a world 100% reliant on green energies, this would mean 100% darkness at home, which is what we have right now. In Texas, as I pointed out yesterday, they had 25 gigawatts of power, or as Doc from Back to the Future would say, gigawatts, right? And they lost more than half of that with it freezing over. So let's talk about Gates. There's hashtags been out there before, but I think Twitter has pretty much purged it. Hashtag Gates of Hell. I put this out yesterday. Gates of Hell freezes over. But we're seeing Bill and 60 Minutes actually picked a bad week to go on an offensive selling all of his reset issues. And it's not just about power. Power is a part of it. But it's also, he's focusing a great deal on what you eat. And so this is the other side of it. He's got the vaccine for you useless eaters, but he also has programs of how he wants to make sure we're not having any food at all. Basically, I guess you could just say, let them eat microbes. I had some clips I was going to play for you today, but with no power on our broadcast here and only broadcasting out on Periscope, I'll just tell you what he had to say in terms of the transcript. Bill Gates said, it's an all-out effort like a world war, but it's us against the greenhouse gases. he is literally, he's like, he's jousting at windmills, really. That's what this guy is doing, but his quixotic quest is going to make him a lot of money, because it's not just a world war, it's a, we could call it, I guess, a global war, right? Because this is happening everywhere. Or you just might call it a globalist war. And we know who these people are really fighting. It's not the greenhouse gases. They're fighting the masses of humanity. So this is just one aspect of it. Now he is rolling this out. He's got a book. Part of the book promotion was to go on 60 Minutes and push this. And as it is breathlessly reported by the Wall Street Journal, by Wired Magazine, by CBS, 60 Minutes, all the big outlets are pushing his agenda. He was, in the words of Wall Street Journal, Bill Gates was at his lakeside compound in Seattle, gearing up for his next effort to save the planet from mass extinction. Is that really what he's trying to do? I mean, I thought that he was trying to create mass extinction with his vaccine program, but now he's going to save it from mass extinction. His new book is How to Avoid a Climate Disaster. Well, we know how you avoid a climate disaster. You don't listen to Bill Gates. Remarkably, said the Wall Street Journal, it is an optimistic, can-do sort of book, chock full of solutions. Well, his solutions are not really can-do solutions. They are must-do mandates that are going to be pushed out by government. And when we look at what he wants to change, As Zero Hedge points out, it is every aspect of the economy. Every aspect of the economy. And in every one of these changes, these are companies that Bill Gates has already bought into. Do you understand what's happening here? Part of the Great Reset. Even if you didn't look at some of the more sinister aspects of this, just on the surface, this is a massive grifting operation. Because what he is doing is the same thing we've seen Wall Street fund managers do, hedge fund managers do. Go in and buy a stock and then manipulate the price of the stock or the company that you've invested in with narratives. Or in the case of Bill Gates, to get people to purchase the technology that he has been plugging. But he's bought into it already. He's bought in on the ground floor. And now you should all get the kind of fake meat that he's selling, because he owns that company and he wants you to buy it. And he's going to use the government to force you to buy that. Because if you don't buy that, if you have, if you eat regular meat, oh, we're all going to die and you're going to burn down the planet. Same type of thing that we've seen with Obama when he goes to Africa on a private jet and says, y'all can't have air conditioning. If y'all had air conditioning, you'd melt the planet down. Only I can have air conditioning, and I can not only have air conditioning, but I can have a private jet. So Gates wants us to allocate $35 billion per year on climate and clean energy research, which, you know, he's, again, on the ground floor with that. He wants to electrify everything. He wants us to eat fake meat, since he says cows account for 4% of all greenhouse gases. Do they? Do they really? Retooling the steel and cement industries. And this is a big part of what he was pushing on CBS's 60 Minutes. It just happens to be the fact that he's bought into a company that injects CO2 into concrete and steel. And so everybody should be doing concrete and steel that way. Everybody should buy the products of his company. Everybody should buy the technology that he owns. That's a big issue. He would like us to have more nuclear energy. Maybe he ought to take a look at Fukushima Part 2, because we had an earthquake there over the weekend, again, at that power plant. But he's got a different way, he says, of generating power, which is really not all that different. It's a new way of doing nuclear reactors. It's not really new. It's been around since 1995, actually longer than that. He wants to tell everybody that it's much safer than the traditional nuclear power plant generation. But back in 1995, they had a massive accident. We'll talk about that in a second here. But in terms of food, he's not even happy to do impossible meat. He said the processing plants that make some of this are going to be using energy as well. And he says, we're going to have to change everything. We're going to have to rethink everything. And nobody gets to keep anything, because we're going to zero. Does that sound familiar? The Great Reset. You'll own nothing and you'll be happier. You'll have absolutely zero energy. And you'll be happier, because you're not going to have any food. You're not going to have any heat or lights. But, it'll be everything for a few people, like Bill Gates, and nothing for everyone else. So he's got a solution. They have a fungus that he said they can use to make sausage and yogurt, and have lots of that. And they found this microbe, as I said, let them eat microbes. Interestingly enough, they found this in the ground at a geyser in Yellowstone National Park. You know what else they found in a geyser in Yellowstone National Park? They found the microbe that is really the heart, that it's actually... You hear the CRISPR-Cas9 genetic modification that is happening, right? That revolutionized the cost of doing genetic modification. That was based on a microbe that they found in Yellowstone. And the now they found another one. And a lot of people will envision this when they see a DNA editing from, and they call it CRISPR-Cas9. They think that it's some kind of microscopic tool like you saw illustrated in Jurassic Park. No, it's not that at all. It's a particular bacteria microbe that they found in a geyser. And now they found another one that they think can be turned into a variety of foods with a very small carbon footprint. Hey, you can turn it into everything. It's like tofu. You can make tofu into everything, they say. Except it doesn't really taste that great. Not a big fan of it. And then he's got other big schemes that he talked about in 60 Minutes. He's going to have giant fans to capture CO2 directly out of the air. Why don't we want CO2 in the air? Talk about that here in a second. He says he's a big believer in wind and solar. Well, I'm not, because I'm doing this broadcast on a cell phone here, because the only UPS that we could find, because they shut down everything with the pandemic, is a piece of garbage, and you can't get any other ones shipped, and we can't keep the lights on here. He said nuclear power will have to do the rest, and he's got a solution for that as well. It's kind of interesting. You know, when we look at this, I had a listener when I talked about the LED streetlights, and I said, well, they're telling you that they're going to spend a lot of money to change out all the conventional, you know, but just like we spend a lot of money to shut down the conventional coal power plants, and then we're going to set up windmills, right? Now the windmills are frozen and not producing electricity. That's why we're having these kind of rolling blackouts. And so I'm not saying that the LED streetlights are bad technology, but you have to make a decision when you're going to trash something that's already working, trash something that you've already paid for. You have to look at it and you have to say, well, how much energy are we going to save and what is going to be the recovery time for that investment? Because you're going to have to pull down what's already there that's working, and you're going to have to put up some new technology. But it's okay because it'll use only a quarter of the electricity that the conventional lights were using, maybe. But then, as I pointed out, they're loading them up with all kinds of surveillance material. They're going to be the 5G networks there. And it's not just going to be the power requirements. I said, think about the power requirements that are going to be involved in all of these things that they're hanging on to these smart street lights. Why are they smart? Because they're spying on you and they're monitoring everything that you do. And that's really the reason why they're doing it. They're not doing it in order to save energy, just like they're not going to electric cars in order to save energy or to save CO2 emissions. As I point out, the cars only save 25% over the life of them, and that's even with a very generous consideration in terms of the way the power is created. So it's not about saving energy. That's the green veneer that they put on this Marxist totalitarian surveillance program. Because it's all about the surveillance. It's all about the control. When they create the electric battery-operated cars, they load them up with tech that allows them to turn it off, allows them to control your car, and also makes it expensive so you can't afford to buy them. And the same thing is going to be happening with these smart streetlights. But there's another aspect of this. When the listener wrote this to me and said, well, you know, they really do save a lot of energy. And I agree. An LED, and he understood my point that we're adding other technology to it. He goes, but it saves, you know, it only uses a quarter of the amount of electricity that a conventional light bulb does. But here's another aspect that I didn't talk about. It's not just the power that is drawn by all of these listening and watching devices and everything else that they're putting on these smart street lamps. That is something that you have to think about, just like, as they point out, with the solar with the windmills in Germany, that there is some electricity that's taken off of the grid to heat them up so they don't freeze. Evidently, they didn't have that design here in Texas. But there is some power that is being used for all of these surveillance things that they put on the new streetlights. But here's the bottom line. When people talk about Bitcoin, you have a lot of people, a lot of these environmentalists are whining about Bitcoin because they said, look at the amount of electricity that's being used to process the transactions. They said it's about globally the amount of electricity is used to process these Bitcoin transactions because as Bitcoin gets older, the amount of processing that has to happen in order for you to mine a particular coin is getting longer and longer. But they said it's about the amount of electricity that Argentina uses annually for Bitcoin processing. Now, when we look at the NSA, a few years ago, they built a massive storage and monitoring and processing facility in Utah. And a lot of people who are in Utah complained about it at the time. They said, you're using more electricity and more water than a city of 20,000 people would typically use here in Utah. And we don't have a lot of water here in Utah. And you're using a lot of electricity as well. So there's a back end to all that. If they're going to use the amount of power that a city would use for that one NSA facility. Can you imagine if they're going to create smart cities and watch everything that we do, monitor and record everything that we do, and then do calculations to make geospatial inferences from everything that we do? Can you imagine the amount of power that's going to be? That's going to be much more than what you see happening with Bitcoin, because this is what they're going to be doing. Not every single person is doing Bitcoin transactions, and not every single person is constantly doing Bitcoin transactions, but that will be the equivalent of what happens with these smart streetlights. So these are the types of things that we see, these schemes that are being put out there, and a lot of it comes from, and again, we're not talking about the vaccines of Bill Gates. Now we're talking about his money and control aspects. And of course, he can make the money and the government gets the control. It's a symbiotic relationship of these people. But every time you see these new technologies coming in, you need to question whether or not they're really going to benefit you or if they're going to benefit somebody like Bill Gates. And of course, Wall Street Journal, CBS, Wired Magazine, they portray him as a philanthropist. He said, Zero Hedge says, as we previously highlighted, while Americans are being told that the dreams of owning private property are over under the Great Reset, you'll own nothing and you'll be happier. Gates and other billionaires have been buying up huge amounts of farmland. Gates is now the biggest owner of farmland in America. Why is he buying farmland if he doesn't want people to farm? You might ask yourself. I think he's got ulterior motives here. Robert Kennedy Jr., RFK Jr., said, quote, to cloak, talking about Gates, to cloak his dystopian plans for humanity and benign intentions, Gates has expropriated the rhetoric of sustainability, biodiversity, good stewardship, and climate. But his plans are dystopian. His plans are to make him even wealthier. As they introduced him on CBS, Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes said, Bill Gates helped to usher in the digital revolution at Microsoft. Let me tell you what he did. He stole the technology from Digital Research. They had an operating system that's called CPM, and it was the de facto standard for everything. And they wanted to license it to IBM. When IBM started to make personal computers, they wanted to license the CPM program. The people at Digital Research, the operating system, they wanted more money than IBM wanted to sell it for. So they got Bill Gates to basically rip it off. And he ripped it off verbatim. He didn't even bother to change the names of BIOS or any of that. Didn't bother to change the syntax of how the operating system is. It was a command line driven operating system, very crude. But he beat them in court. He stole it, legally stole it. He actually did the same thing to Steve Jobs at Apple. He stole technology from him and beat him in court. So Anderson Cooper, CBS, 60 Minutes, says the good news is that Gates believes it's possible to prevent a catastrophic rise in temperatures. The bad news, he says, the next 30 years we need scientific breakthroughs, technological innovations, and global cooperation, and we all need to buy whatever it is that Bill Gates has already invested in, the companies that he owns. We need to buy their products. That's what this is. Now, let me give you an example of this. Anderson Cooper said, you're talking about changing everything in the economy. I mean, every aspect of it. He says, yeah, and the physical world, yeah, and the physical world. See, these are the people who have taken over cyberspace. You like the way they're running cyberspace? You want them to run physical space for you? Yeah, they want to do it. He says, we're sitting around here in this restaurant eating burgers and fries. He said, what would change about this? And he begins by talking about, well, the burgers are a big deal, the plastic, the paper, these potatoes. You can't have this, right? With potatoes, you're talking about fertilizer, the irrigation system that's used, the tractors, the transportation. See, they want to eradicate everything. When they say take it to zero, they really mean it, right? No fertilizer, no irrigation, no transportation, no tractors, no farms, and no food. Let them eat microbes. And so Bill Gates says, when you're going to zero, you don't get to skip anything, nothing at all. And so he immediately then pivots from the French fries and hamburgers that are there to saying, well, just this building, the steel, the concrete. He said, you don't realize that making steel and concrete accounts for a lot of carbon dioxide emissions. Well, carbon dioxide is not a poison. And it's very common in mainstream media for the reporters to get very confused about carbon monoxide, which is what kills you if you turn on your car engine and you shut the garage door, commit suicide that way. But carbon dioxide is breathed out by all animals. It's breathed out even by Bill Gates. And it's a good thing. You know, when the cows that they hate so much, the cows eat the grass, and then the cows fart out CO2. And then the grass grows from the CO2. And then the cows eat the grass, and the cycle repeats, right? Now, when God designs something like that, that is a repeating cycle, that is something that is really sustainable, right? It's been sustained from the beginning of creation. But Bill Gates and his people call that a threat to your existence. That's an existential threat, the cows and the CO2 and the grass. That's an existential threat. No, no. It's a sustainable feedback loop. It's a symbiotic relationship, and it's designed by God. But he's got a better design, and he's got something that he wants to sell you. And it's worse than the Brooklyn Bridge, quite frankly. He's pouring money, as they pointed out on 60 Minutes. Gates has been pouring money into Carbon Cure. And this is a company that grabs CO2 out of the air and sticks it into the concrete so you can't see it anymore. Was that a good thing? I mean, what are the plants going to grow on if you pull out the CO2? This is a guy who wants to terraform our planet. He wants to block out the sun. He wants to pull out the CO2. And all of this is for his own personal profit. Gates regularly consults with this investment team that he has. And guess who's on his investment team? Jeff Bezos, Michael Bloomberg, and other people. So you got the richest men that the world has ever known, a very few, who want to control everything. Because as Rockefeller said, when asked how much money is enough, he said always a little bit more. And so Bloomberg wants a little more, Bezos wants a little more, Gates wants a little more, and they don't want you to have anything. And they will be very happy when you have nothing. They'll be very happy when your life goes to zero. So Gates consults with this team of investors, and their team of top scientists and top entrepreneurs, as CBS points out. They've invested so far in 50 companies with cutting-edge ideas. There you go. And he says, well, what's the craziest one that you invested in? Well, he says, it's kind of hard to describe. He said, we pump water down into geological formations, and then the energy that we use to pump in, they can then draw that energy back out. So it's kind of like a water pressure storage thing. It's like, well, this sounds like fracking, which a lot of environmentalists hate. Oh, but it's good because now it's Gates who's doing the fracking. And they're doing the fracking not to get out oil. And he says, but you gave money to it? And he goes, oh, yeah, I gave lots of money to it. So we should all be buying into this now. Now that he's invested in it on the ground floor, he can sell it to the rest of us. And so they said, well, cows count for about 4% of the greenhouse gases. So Gates has invested in two companies that make plant-based meat substitutes, Impossible Foods, and Beyond Meat. But that's not good enough because they use too much electricity. So now he's involved in another company called Nature's Find that uses fungus. And that's the one that they found in the geyser in Yellowstone. And every one of these, he is portrayed by the media, by CBS, by Wall Street Journal, by Wired magazine. He's portrayed as a philanthropist who is trying to save the world. And yet, he is the guy who is hawking to you as a requirement all of these schemes that he has already invested in. Here's the final one here. A nuclear reactor that the company is called TerraPower. And he says, well, you know, the problem is in a regular nuclear reactor, you've got water that's flowing past and it's heating up these rods that are here, and it generates a lot of high pressure. The high heat and high pressure can cause an explosion, like in Chernobyl in 1986. But he says his reactor, his TerraPower reactor, won't use water to cool down the fuel rods. They plan to use liquid sodium. Do you know what happens to liquid sodium when it comes in contact with air? It explodes. It ignites. I don't know that this is somehow a more reliable technology because, as I point out, they've already had a big nuclear accident with a power plant, nuclear power plant that used liquid sodium back in 1995. But he's now putting this out. He's gotten an $80 million grant from the Department of Energy because these billionaires like Elon Musk and Gates and Bezos and Bloomberg, they can get this money from the government. And then they can force you to buy their products. And I think it's because a lot of these regulators are also side stockholders in all of this. So, yeah, this is the philanthropist that is portraying himself as savior of the world. His climate war accelerates, and as Zero Hedge points out, you know, there's a big craze right now in the uranium stocks that hasn't really been picked up by a lot of people. So many things are going into hyperinflation, whether you're talking about the price of houses or you're talking about some of these other fundamental building blocks that we have in our society. One of these is uranium, and another one is iridium. Besides uranium, they said readers should also check out iridium, the latest rare earth metal to undergo a massive speculative rally. Iridium spot prices have risen more than 160% in just 2 months, and it's used as part of as a catalyst in a hydrogen technology where they use electrolysis to break down water for energy. They said it's also a byproduct of platinum and palladium. But here's the key. When they talk about a climate war, they're not talking about it in the sense that Bill Gates is. Bill Gates is talking about a war against your lifestyle, a war against your food, a war against heating your home, lighting your house, a war against being able to travel personally. No, they're talking about a war between the U.S. and China in terms of fighting for these very rare earth minerals that are being used in these high-tech products. And this is going to drive the price of them up. But don't worry, because even though electric vehicles will become very, very expensive because they won't have access to all the minerals needed to make the batteries in them, it's not really a problem because they don't intend on you having a car going anywhere. We have United Airlines just put in a big purchase order to take place in just a couple of years. That purchase order will be for flying cars. Are you going to be able to afford that? I'm not going to be able to afford that. We will not have flying cars. The flying cars will be for these people like Bill Gates and others who will fly from their penthouse to the other penthouse. But the rest of us will be, if we have any vehicles at all, will be operating them like Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble. It'd be like one of these little tyke cars that kids used to go around. It'll be foot power. That's why they call it Sidewalk Labs when Google sets up their smart cities. That's the way we're going to be getting around. We're going to be hoofing it if they allow us out of our home. I mean, we're so filthy and diseased, they've got to keep us locked up and kept away. All right, at this point, I would play our new shiny commercial, but we don't have the ability to do anything today other than do a report on the phone. So if you would like to support this broadcast, I'll just remind you, you can find all the links to where you can find the show typically. Today is a different case in point, but we'll be putting out a podcast somehow, some way. And I didn't think we were going to get much up yesterday, but it turned out that the UPS worked for an entire day. Kind of like all the renewable windmills and solar panels or anything. We have this brand spanking new UPS, which we got a few weeks ago. Haven't been able to find another one anywhere, and that was really the first time we needed it yesterday. We were able to get stuff up, and actually our internet went faster. I didn't think we'd be able to post the full show yesterday, but it actually went faster when we lost power because we kept up our internet connection, and everybody else who lost power got off of the internet. That's basically on our party line here, if you will. And so we're able to get everything up. Today, I don't know what we're going to be able to get up. Because we're going to have to try to download this from Periscope and then cut it and then put it back up. And with the power going up and down every few minutes, not really sure how this is going to roll out. But if you'd like to support us, and if you have internet and are watching this right now, you can go to thedavidknightshow.com. You'll find the links where we typically are on live stream. That's at Trovo and DLive and Periscope until they stop Periscope in March. You'll also find the links to where we are on BitChute and YouTube, and you'll find the links to where we are on podcasts. That's Podbean, and it gets pushed out to a lot of other sites, iTunes, Spotify, iHeart we're now on. So all those are there, as well as links to them. And finally, you'll find a place, most importantly, where you can support the program here. Without your support, we will not be able to continue. We will not just be out of electricity, we'll be out of money to pay for food and mortgages. So we really do hope that, and we really do appreciate, some people have been very generous with us, and we've had contributions of any size are always welcome. I had somebody send me a Cash App contribution of $4 and said, thanks for showing me Daniel Suarez, because I've talked about Daniel Suarez, a sci-fi writer, but he also shows, focuses on a lot of these technological issues like genetic modification or autonomous killer drones. And so he sent me $4 for telling him about Daniel Suarez. So you keep watching and you contribute, and we'll get even more than a tip to some authors. Another one I would recommend to anybody, it's not entertainment, but it'll tell you where we're going. And that is Live Not by Lies by Rod Dreher. That was a tip to me from somebody who was a very generous contributor. And that is an excellent book. If you want to understand why they're purging Shakespeare, these people are not crazy. They know exactly what they're doing. And people who've lived under Marxism and communism know exactly what they're doing. And this is a very, very dangerous thing. It's as dangerous as the purge that's being conducted by Bill Gates right now against everything we have. So if you go to The David Knight Show, you'll see links of how you can support us with Subscribestar, with PayPal, with Venmo, with Cash App, with Bitcoin, even with a P.O. box. All of that is at The David Knight Show, along with links to the videos, the live streams, and the podcasts that we have. Let's take a quick look at vaccines, since we've been talking about Bill Gates. One of his pet projects, of course, the vaccines. And here we are on day 339 of America held hostage. What a strange world it has been this last year. I never really thought that we would see anything like the lockdowns that we've seen happen globally. I never believed I would be doing a broadcast out of my living room with no power. But here we are. 2021 just keeps getting stranger. And of course, as the weather is being talked about by everybody, because what is happening throughout the United States, especially throughout Texas and Oklahoma, report from CBS is that Texas winter blasts have halted delivery of COVID-19 vaccines. Oh, really? Yeah, vaccines hit hardest. I mean, that is their primary focus. I mean, we're sitting here in the dark, but have you had your vaccine yet? It's cold enough you could almost store these things outside. Single-digit Fahrenheit degrees here. But no, you have to get down to minus 95 for these things. So in Texas, the Harris County Health System in Houston, Rice University, told the school that it had about 1,000 vaccines that were going to go to waste. So the window is just a couple of hours, so we got to take it quickly. So get everybody in. Roll up your sleeve. If you ain't bugging, you might got the disease, right? So it's soul vaccination time in Houston. They're rolling this stuff out big time because it's going to go to waste, even as cold as it is here. Which, again, every time I look at this and think about how perishable these things are, the fact they got to keep them at minus 95 degrees, the fact that they then reconstitute them, and it has to be, you know, reconstituted, final step, they send these things out with 5 doses per vial, or is it 6? Oh, they can't quite make up their mind. They've gone both directions. Is it 5? Is it 6? Oh, I don't know. We ain't making pianos here. Just go ahead and do whatever you want. That bothers me because, you know, a dose is very important when you come to medication, is it? Oh, except for vaccines, because they don't have any product liability. So who cares, right? They made their product. They made their profit. But anyway, you got 5 or 6 doses in a vial. Who knows? And it has to be mixed by the people who are going to administer it. And then it has to be administered within 6 hours or thrown away. And I want to know, and I've asked this many times, I can't find the answer anywhere. Nobody is asking, because all the mainstream media
just bows down and fawns over the vaccine companies. They never ask anything critical. But if there was real media out there that had access to them, of course, you know, I could give them a call. They wouldn't give me the time of day. But what we need to know is what happens when this stuff perishes. I mean, does it become just a placebo or does it become dangerous? I mean, wouldn't you want to know that? Wouldn't you think that some reporter from the Wall Street Journal or from USA Today or from CNN or from Fox News would want to know about that? No, they don't. It doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter to them. When we look at what is happening in terms of the administration of vaccines, there's this bit of propaganda before we get into some more adverse effects that are happening in rest homes. This is coming out of the UK. And they're trying to produce demand for younger people to get the COVID shots, right? Because, again, why should you take the risk of the vaccine, which is a non-zero risk? Why should you take a risk when you have a statistically zero chance of dying from the COVID? And you do have a statistically zero chance. This is one of the things that's an indication that they were rigging the statistics, because when you have a real pandemic, you see people dying of every age. And that hasn't been the case with this. With this, you've only had people who are elderly, and it goes up exponentially as people get elderly and with multiple comorbidities. And so it looks like they're just labeling the actuarial table as COVID. And then you find out that no more people died last year than died all the previous years. And so that's exactly what this is. So in an effort to propagandize young people in the UK, they're telling them that 40% of the new serious cases are under 60. Now, I want to take a look at the numbers. The numbers, right? The numbers. It's all about the numbers. Statistics don't lie, but liars use statistics. And lying public health officials and lying media will use the numbers and a way to lie. Let me give you an example of this. So let's just assume, and this is a big assumption, that they're telling the truth about people who are in serious condition in the UK. According to the British Health Ministry, they say 1,008 people were considered in serious condition. And they said, and that's a slight increase from the day before when they had 973 people in serious condition. It doesn't mean that they're going to die. They diagnose them as serious, and they diagnose this as COVID. So let's just say that it really is COVID, okay, and use these numbers. So this is the way they argue that this is something that is now affecting young people. They said, of the serious cases, 38% were under the age of 60. At the end of January, it was 26% of the cases were under the age of 60. So you go from 26% of the cases under 60, age of 60, to 38%. They said, that's a 50% increase. Okay, but what are we really talking about here? We're talking, let's put this in a different context. Assuming even that their numbers are real. Let's just assume they're real. So if they've got 1,000 people who are in serious condition and they got, 26% of them are under 60, so that's about 260 people, going up to 380, right? And so I said, look at that. That's a big increase. Okay, that's an increase of 80 people, right? I'm sorry, 120 people. But that's out of 68 million people in the UK. So you got 120 more people who have a serious case of COVID, they say. And because of that, all of the young people who are skeptical about getting the vaccine really need to get the vaccine now. See how they're using these numbers to lie to people? Meanwhile, when you talk about people who are skeptical, it's not just young people in the UK who are skeptical of the vaccine. South Koreans are skeptical of the British vaccine, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. And they are going to, they're saying, well, I don't think we're going to be administering that one. And now even Cuba is getting into the vaccine arms race, the arms race, right? This is starting to turn into, I remember the early days, we were talking about Bill Gates stealing the digital research operating system. And it got to the point where everybody was making IBM PC knockoff clones, because you could go out and get off the shelf components, which is what what IBM did. They didn't really make anything new. So you could go out and you could buy an Intel processor, and you could go out and buy an S100 bus. And everybody around the country was making their own PCs from scratch. The only person who was making any money off of it was Bill Gates, because he had legally stolen the digital research operating system. But everybody else was making it. That's what we got with the vaccines right now. Now we got Cuba making vaccines. Everybody is making vaccines. And in L.A., restaurant workers are now deemed essential for vaccination priority. Do you see a problem with that? How long has it been now, 339 days, that restaurants were not essential and the people who worked there were not essential? Their jobs were not essential. Their work was not essential. But now they're essential for the vaccine. Why is that being done? Because they are planning to make sure that, if anybody has an adverse reaction to the vaccine, well, that's just an aberration. That can't be from the vaccine. It has to be something else, right? So they're not going to identify this as something that is dangerous for people. But the somebody has an adverse reaction to it, they die, or they have a very serious injury and they no longer can work in the restaurant, they're gone, they're forgotten, and people ignore what really happened with it. But the people who get it and don't have an adverse reaction and don't die, they're going to be there, and in a few months they're going to come back to these people and say, well, we're not going to let anybody go into restaurants or pubs or anything unless they've had a vaccine passport. And you people have all had the vaccine, and you know that there's nothing wrong with this thing. And so you need to help us to enforce this, because these people are the ones who are the threats to society, these vaccine refusers. You've got to come after them. And this is what we're seeing in Israel right now. We got Benjamin Netanyahu, who made a deal with the devil, Pfizer, in order to use the Jewish people as lab rats for the Pfizer vaccine, is now suggesting that anybody who is not vaccinated should be disclosed and publicly shamed, right? Because this is where they're all headed. And as he puts this proposal out, proposed a law that would allow the names of people who have not taken the vaccine to be sent to local authorities. Yeah, what will they do with that, right? This is an idea that was approved by the country's coronavirus cabinet, the same people who sold out the Israelis to the Pfizer pharmaceutical to be used as lab rats. So it's approved by the country's coronavirus cabinet and by the National Security Council. The National Security Council? You notice how the military is involved in all of this, just like in the U.S.? Isn't that interesting? Isn't it interesting how you have these help bureaucrats, these help dictators, joining forces with the military over and over again in every country? It's happening in America. It's happening in Israel. It's happening in Germany. Yeah, got a story about that, how they're using military troops to stand by and administer the vaccine to these elderly people in rest homes. The military is rolling this out. That ought to concern you. Israel has been the global leader in terms of vaccination rate because, he sold out the people to Pfizer to get the front of the line. But the campaign to vaccinate as many people as possible appears to have lost some steam. Imagine that. Is it because of the massive number of adverse reactions that they've had in Israel? Uh-huh. In recent weeks, it's lost steam. They say the Times of Israel reports a, quote, drop in public enthusiasm. Yeah, exactly. The government is now trying to reinvigorate the campaign by propping up pro-vaccine messaging and combating disinformation. And let me tell you, we're seeing this coming up in spades. I have an article here. We're going to cut this broadcast short today, I think. But I have an article where they're talking about how big tech needs to get involved in censoring podcasts. Why is that? Because with podcasts, they're going to be escalating this propaganda, disinformation, purging, and censorship. They're going to be escalating this. This is going to be part of the final assault. Once they get the low-hanging fruits that are walking out around out there with the masks on their face, once they get these people to take all their shots, then they are going to be going after the rest of us. And it's going to be a campaign of doxing, of shaming, and after that happens, and censorship. And after that goes on for a while, it'll be followed by mandates. It won't just be corporate coercion. It just won't be the mob coming after you, the cancel mob. We have Bill Gates again. His daughter is talking about how much she loves the vaccine, how she learned to stop worrying and love the vaccine. And she's going to be a doctor, she says. That's what she wants to be. And so why does she have to worry about being a doctor? I mean, all the doctors in the world and all the health officials are all listening to Bill Gates. And he doesn't have a medical degree. Why does his daughter need a medical degree? Right? He is the ultimate health authority in the world. And everybody defers to him. Not only that, but he's the ultimate authority on energy and on meat and everything. So, I mean, you just defer to Bill Gates. And so she calls her dad. She is in her 20s, and she is an aspiring physician. She is a pre-med student. And so as a pre-med student, she is qualified even more so than her father to give us medical advice, right? She says, sadly, the vaccine did not implant my genius father into my brain. If only mRNA had that power. Wow. I don't know what in her imagination or her pre-med education she thinks mRNA is doing. It's going to transfer her father's brain into her. She says, I am beyond privileged. Yes, she is. But then she says, to receive my first dose of mRNA, to teach my cells to mount a protective immune system response to the virus. As a medical student and as an aspiring physician, I am grateful that it will give me protection and safety for my future practice. Yeah, okay. She's 24 years old. Others were other people who believe in the vaccine were very upset that she jumped to the head of the line. Since at 24 years old, she doesn't have any risk of anything serious. And so the question I have is, did she even really take it? Or is this a PR propaganda, right? How did she, as a young student, get to this? Is it because she's a pre-med student? They put her at the front of the line? And so I mentioned before how we have the military delivering this everywhere, but we also have reports everywhere of what is happening in rest homes and nursing homes. I have to say it was this last week I spent a great deal of time. Karen and I talked to my 96-year-old aunt back in North Carolina who is in a nursing home. She is not suffering from dementia, but she's getting pretty close, and she's hard of hearing, very hard of understanding. And I had talked to her before. I said, don't get the vaccine. And she says, well, I've just been looking at all the commercials, and I think I'll probably just do it and get it over with. And Karen is sitting here holding the phone. Hold the phone. And I, no exaggeration, is that Karen? I talked to her for 45 minutes to an hour, just trying to explain to her about the nursing home story that was broken here in the U.S., where the guy got on and said, I've done this for over 10 years. I know these people, and I can't do this anymore. He's a lay pastor. He broke down in tears. He said nobody had died over the previous year. And when they gave the vaccine within 14 days, they had 14 people die. And several others who were essentially comatose, unable to walk, other issues. And he recorded that. Now, that's just one person in the U.S., and I tried to explain that to her for 45 minutes. Just that, what I just said. Just went over the details of that. I think, finally, at the end, she said, I won't get it because you say don't get it, but I don't understand it. I mean, that's what they're doing to people in nursing homes. We have reports coming out of Israel, out of Norway, out of Portugal, out of Sweden, out of Switzerland. Of course, the ones that I've pointed out in the U.S., and there's been several in the U.S., according to RFK Jr., coincidence, he says, is turning out to be quite lethal to COVID vaccine recipients. If the clinical trials are good predictors, the rate of coincidence is likely to increase dramatically after the second shot. It suggests that almost all the supposed benefits of the COVID vaccination and the vast majority of the injuries were associated with the second dose of the experimental mRNA vaccine. As a matter of fact, I saw on Twitter a guy who is a professor, I think he's an economics professor. And he said, because he's in the university, they're requiring him to get this shot. He said he talked to a young person there who had already gone through this and had taken their second shot. And the person said, I thought I was going to die. And he's saying, well, you know, I'm a pretty old professor. Nearly killed the shot. I've talked about the nurse who was young in her 30s and very healthy. And she said she had a 105-degree temperature for a couple of days. That's enough to kill somebody who's a frail condition, that in and of itself. That's a dangerous level of fever. That's not just a high fever. That's a dangerous fever. So in this particular case in Germany, it's being reported on by 21st Century Wire, but also by a German paper. They mentioned the lawyers. They mentioned very specifically where this is. It's very well documented where it is in Berlin. Spandau, the name of the facility, exactly how many people were administered this. 8 out of 31 seniors who suffered from dementia but were in very good physical condition according to their age before the vaccination died. In other words, 25% of them died. A little bit more than 25%. The first death occurred after only 6 days. 5 other seniors died approximately 14 days after vaccination. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And so they pointed out that they brought these people in, that there were 3 aides and 2 federal soldiers in camouflage uniforms. They said typically these people who have dementia have very defensive behavior. Don't touch me or whatever. But they got very, very passive when they saw the people in uniform there. They said because they're all of the age that they would have been around during World War II. They believe that it possibly reminded them of traumatic war circumstances that they've been involved in. But then when they gave them the second dose, they didn't bring them in mass like that. What they did was they gave it to them where they could find them. I mean, they're just stalking around the rest home, and when they find one of these people, they just give them the vaccine shot right there. And it's not just at that rest home. They also documented in other rest homes where they had this. And other, they said, following up, they did a second round of this in a nursing home where they applied this to 21 seniors. They said 11 of them are now, that's more than 50%, now showing persistent extreme fatigue. They're partially gasping for breath. They're partially have edema, skin rash, and yellowish-grayish skin discoloration. And as of, that was on January the 24th, as of February the 10th, none of those had died yet, but the health was steadily declining. And so this is reported, as I said, from multiple sources. They have a lawyer who is looking into this in terms of the fact that they are not getting the consent of these people, some of them trying to fight them off. But again, they have dementia. But concerned about how this is being rolled out. They also talk about the Paul Ehrlich Institute, which is looking into what RFK Jr.'s organization had pointed out very early on, the fact that they were pegylating these nanoparticles. That means that they wrap them in polyethylene glycol in order to deliver it. They said this is troubling because in numerous preclinical studies, PEG, polyethylene glycol liposomes, have been shown to transport substances across the blood-brain barrier. Now, this may be one of the reasons why they're having some of these issues, but it is well known to be an issue with creating anaphylactic shock. I've got a longer article that I would, I will go ahead and do this today, even though we're going to cut this broadcast a little bit short because the power. I think this is a very important article about what is really happening with censorship. And again, it involves RFK Jr., but not about vaccines. And before I get into this, I just want to remind you about how you can typically find the program. I don't really know what's going to be happening today with this. We're going to have to download this from Periscope. The only place we're able to get it up on the phone because of the problems, as I mentioned earlier in the program, with the uninterruptible power supply, it got interrupted, and it only worked for a day, and then it bit the dust. So it's not taking a charge, and it's not working. It died on us pretty early in the broadcast. So we got things fired back up again here on Periscope. Typically, we are on DLive and Trovo, and not just Periscope. And you'll find those links at thedavidknightshow.com, along with links to where the videos are on BitChute, and YouTube, and where you can find the podcasts on Podbean, as well as it gets pushed out to iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, Stitcher, many other sites. You'll have all the links there at thedavidknightshow.com. Also, links to where you can support us at Subscribestar, PayPal, Bitcoin, Venmo, Cash App, even a P.O. Box. We really do appreciate and need your support. And so you can find those links there at thedavidknightshow.com. Links to where you can find the program and links to how you can support us to make sure that the program continues. I've gotten some very nice letters I just want to mention here from listeners who have contributed. One of them says, keep telling the truth and the truly woke people that aren't blindly following the right or left will find you. This is from Jan and Ishmael. Thank you so much for that. And by the way, that reminds me, please make sure that you pass the links along to other people. And that is one of the best ways that you can help us. If you're not able to contribute financially, that would be a big help. And an even bigger help is to pray for us and to pray for our family here as we work through this. Another person says, I appreciate your dedication to the truth. My husband and I try to listen to every YouTube video that gets posted. And that reminds me, we talk about YouTube. I'm in YouTube jail right now. I've got a couple of strikes on us, and they're putting on strikes that are going back a couple of weeks earlier. So we haven't been able to post anything for quite a while. And I'm not sure how much longer we're going to have the channel up. I mean, they have given us strikes on things that I didn't think they were going to strike us on. I didn't put up purposely, don't put up any information on YouTube about vaccines. I haven't talked a great deal about the election. That, you know, just like they have been shutting down anybody who talks about election fraud, that is not a theory. That's a longstanding fact that we have election fraud. But anybody who talks about vaccines are shutting that down as well, because YouTube has got Google's going to have a big wad of cash that's going to be put out through the Ad Council. There's $250 million that's going to be put out for vaccine propaganda. Anybody that questions a pandemic, anybody who questions the vaccines, you're not going to be allowed to be there. So we kept that off, but they still put strikes on us. So make sure you go to the other places to find the videos, BitChute and YouTube, as well as the live streams and the podcast, because YouTube censors everything. This will be the seventh time they've kicked me off of YouTube once they do it this time. And they will do it, no doubt about it. I wanted to get some of the information up there, but frankly, I'm just not going to modify my content and try to get on YouTube with all this. If they want to kick me off, they kick me off. It is what it is, and there's going to be censorship involved in that. Finally, I have a nice note from Tom here. Happy Valentine's Day. For God who commanded the light to shine out of darkness has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God and the face of Jesus Christ. 2 Corinthians 4. Bless you. And he says, in the northern meaning. Took me a while to catch that. I said, oh, yeah, I know. Because I joke about how in the South, we say as a kind of a backhanded slap to somebody, well, bless their heart. And so what he means by that in a northern way, he means, no, I really mean God bless you with that. Before I get into RFK Jr., let me just say, you know, we're talking about election corruption. A poll, RT reports, a poll shows that a majority of Americans want a third party as support for this idea peaks with disappointment from both Democrats and Republicans, not just Republicans, but also Democrats. You think Democrats are disappointed in these people who don't want to do anything other than a kind of McCarthyism against the right now that's coming out, or this impeachment process? And I didn't even talk about that because yesterday, and I'm not going to talk about it today, it was a foregone conclusion that this wasn't going to work. You know, Rand Paul held the vote, and it's 55 to 45 that this was even constitutional. Well, they have to have two-thirds. So they were a long way from getting that. In other words, they have to have 67, not 55. And so they needed another 12 Republican senators to switch sides, and they didn't. And they held that vote again, and it was almost identical after the first day of presentation. They only lost one more Republican senator. So there was no point in continuing on with this. It was a PR move. This was not about impeaching President Trump. They had no chance of doing that. This was about demonizing his followers. And it's about creating a second Patriot Act for the Domestic Terror Act that they're putting this out with. So that's why I didn't cover this, because this is turning into a civil war within the Republican establishment party. And it's not really a civil war. There's always been a civil war there. The vast majority of the Republican Party is no different from the Democrats. It's always been that way. It's just now that you can see it with Mitch McConnell, and you couldn't necessarily see it before as clearly. Mitch McConnell, Mitt Romney, and others. So everybody's looking at this. Everybody would like to have other choices. And yet the reality is, and I've said this many times, third parties have essentially, the Democrats and Republicans have gamed the system so that you're not going to have any third parties. Ballot access is virtually impossible as a third party. If you do get on the ballot, if you spend a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of resources as a new fledgling independent party to get on the ballot, they will still exclude you from the debates. They use the same argument, and this is for decades now. This is going back to the early 90s when I was involved with the third party, Libertarian Party, North Carolina. They would use the same argument to keep us out of the debates that they are using now to keep people off of social media. Well, it's privately run. And so the people who are running these debates can decide who they want in the debates. And we're not exercising any government censorship. We're just not going to let any third party candidates in on the debate. Interestingly enough, I was able to get in on a debate when I ran for Congress because NPR was desperate to promote the Democrat. This was a heavily Republican district, and it was right after the Republicans had taken the Congress with Newt Gingrich's contract with America, a 10-point plan. And I ran on a 10-point plan. I called it the Bill of Rights. Imagine that. I said, here's my contract with America. It's called the Bill of Rights, and it's got 10 points to it. And the Republicans and Democrats have ignored every single aspect of this. Well, they had a debate at NPR, and the incumbent, the new Republican incumbent that had just gotten elected 2 years earlier, now did not want to get involved in the debates, not at all. And they had a sacrificial lamb running as a Democrat, and NPR wanted to give him some exposure. So they got me together with the another third-party candidate, and the three of us had a debate on TV. It's the first time I was on TV. It was in a debate, political debate. And the other candidate was from a party called the Natural Law Party, and it was a party that was it was an organization that was up in the mountains of North Carolina, and they did they were all about meditation, and they were called them they were. Other people call them the flying swamis. They would sit cross-legged on the floor, and they would bounce up and down, and they would meditate to save the world's problems. And they got on the ballot, and they called themselves the Natural Law Party. We were called libertarians. Nobody knew what libertarians were. And so they thought that I was a liberal, and they thought she was a libertarian. And it was kind of a fiasco. The first question they asked to her, and they asked her, what do you think about vouchers? And she didn't have any idea what they were talking about. They were talking about educational vouchers. She had no clue. And she stammered and stuttered for a while and then just gave up. And then it's like, here we go. And so it was kind of a cartoonish thing. And guess what? She got the same number of votes that I did. So I realized that it was a total waste of time. And I believe that elections are a waste of time. And let me tell you something. Because of the debate situation, when you've got a situation with a other debates where there's a three-way run and the Democrats and Republicans wanted to debate each other like the gubernatorial election, they would not let a reasonable third-party candidate in on that because that would have been very damaging to them. And so they will control the debates. They will control the ballot. And this is even before we got into electronic voting in a heavy way. I'm talking about the 1990s. Now that you've got electronic voting, now that you have all these other measures that they put in for the longest time, and now that they've added ballot harvesting and mail by vote by mail and all this sort of thing, there is absolutely no point to any of these elections, third party or otherwise, unless you go back to paper ballots and you have people who are going to be observers of the election And if you're going to have open ballots and you're going to have open debates, if you don't have that, you don't have an election. You're not going to have a third party. All you're going to wind up with is a bunch of grifting billionaires and crooked politicians running this system. That's why I didn't even talk about what's going on with this charade in Washington. But let's talk a little bit about where all of this censorship is coming. There's an excellent article from the Off Guardian. This is a UK publication. They call themselves the Off Guardian because the Guardian is pretty well known as a British publication. This is picked up by Zero Hedge, and it's called Opening the CIA's Can of Worms. Can of Worms. The CIA and the media, says Edward Curtin and offguardian.org, the CIA and the media are part of the same criminal conspiracy. And he quotes that from Douglas Valentine's important book. He said, the CIA as organized crime. That's exactly what it is. He says, in his comments, Edward Curtin says, the corporate mainstream media are stenographers for the national security state's ongoing psychological operations aimed at the American people, just as they have done the same for an international audience. You know, going back to Operation Mockingbird and so forth. Very well documented. We have long been subjected to this kind of information warfare, right? And I have to say, it's not limited just to the corporate mainstream media. Some of the biggest alternative media are also engaged in this information war. And the way that they do it is not as stenographers for the CIA. The way they do it is to discredit the truth. They'll tell you the truth, and then they'll garnish it with a lie. Or they'll garnish it with an exaggeration to make the truth unbelievable, to make the truth easily debunked. And it's that little bit of garnishment added to the truth that can be even more discrediting than the false narrative coming from the mainstream media. People in Stalinist Russia understood that the two papers that they were allowed to see, one of them was called Truth and the other one was called News. They had Izvestia, which meant news. They had Pravda, which meant truth. And the saying was, there is no truth in Pravda, there is no news in Izvestia. People understand that about the corporate mainstream media, but some people still don't understand how some of the big alternative media will push a lie that discredits the actual truth while telling you the truth. They tell you the truth, then they make it unbelievable in the way that they present it. They sow the seeds of its being able to be debunked by the CIA. That's a very, very common procedure to do that. They say, so the information warfare, whose purpose is to win the hearts and minds of the American people, to pacify them into being victims of their own complicity. He said, another way of putting this is to say that for all practical purposes, when it comes to matters that bear on important foreign and domestic matters, the CIA and the media in general cannot be distinguished. Having already banned critics from writing in their pages or talking on their screens, media giants want to make the quieting of dissenting voices complete. And so you have headlines like this from the New York Times. Robert Kennedy Jr. barred from Instagram over fake virus claims. And as Edward Curtin says, they said, notice that they did not use the word alleged in front of the fake virus claims. This is a headline designed to indict him and make him guilty in the public's eye. He says, which brings me to the recent work of Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone, both of whom have strongly and rightly decried the censorship. But he points out that they've got two basic views of the way the censorship is being rolled out by the establishment media, and it is lacking and the core. And I think this is an excellent article because Edward Curtin understands what is really going on with the CIA, which is not being addressed by Glenn Greenwald and not being addressed by Matt Taibbi and others. They're missing the core about this. So let's talk about first, what do they say? Glenn Greenwald, and I agree with what he has to say, but he doesn't go far enough, which is what Edward Curtin is pointing out. He says, first of all, Greenwald and Matt Taibbi will point out the corporate media have divided up the territory to their own audiences, and they operate in an echo chamber. So You have liberals talking to liberals. And this is, CNN, the New York Times, NBC, et cetera. And then you have conservatives talking to conservatives. And so that'd be Fox News and Breitbart. So they have their own little echo chambers. And they have their own, that both of them represent a political party, right? You want to see the Democrat politicians? Oh, they go on all these different CNN, MSNBC shows, and Fox News has all the Republican politicians to come on. So they have their echo chambers for their own little audiences. And they've abandoned old school journalism that, despite its shortcomings, involved objectivity or the attempt to be objective, and the reporting of different facts and perspectives within limits. Old school journalism is suffering as a result, and therefore writers such as Greenwald and Tiabi and Chris Hedges have taken their work to the internet. So they're saying, look, these different media organizations here have become completely partisan. And that was my problem with InfoWars. When I went to InfoWars, Alex had a history of being a skeptic. And he criticized both left and right. But then when Trump came along, he not only became partisan, he became hyper-partisan. He became essentially a lackey of Donald Trump, unquestioning and unwilling to question anything that Trump did, explaining away anything that Trump did that was wrong as 4D chess, etc. You know where this has happened. And so the same thing has happened to the alternative media as well. And again, any truth that is out there is garnished with a lie so that it is easily discredited. But the second point that's being made by Greenwald and Tiabi, they said, in their opinion, the great call for censorship is not something that Silicon Valley wants to do. They said Silicon Valley, this is Ed Curtin's summary of what Glenn Greenwald and Matt Tiabi are saying. Silicon Valley wants a lot of people so they can make a lot of money. And so for them to purge people, that's not really their business model. But they're doing it because you've got the tattletales and the censors who are coming from the New York Times, coming from CNN, who are pushing for this stuff, and they're caving to them. He said, these are people that Greenwald and Tiabi are pointing out are power-hungry jerks at the New York Times and at CNN and others, who are trying to sniff out dissenting voices that they can recommend should be banned. They do it in part, writes Glenn Greenwald, they do it in part for power.